Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bechuras Daf Mem Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we continue, we turn to the top of Daf Mem Dalid, and we continue with different problems that affect a Kohen from being acceptable as serving as a Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash. Different physical phenomenon that fall under the general category of blemishes. However, as we've said on previous occasions, there are different levels of problem. We have a mum that's mechalel avoda. We have eino shove bizarro shel aroin, which if one has that level of deficiency, he's in violation of an asay, a positive command, and we have something that is osir mishum maris ho'ayin. So, we are not going to dwell on the specific categories, but we are aware that there are different levels of problem. Nevertheless, we are dealing with problems, and before we learn the Gemara itself, the outside margin, we see the nosei mivneh heading. We see a double underline featured, as you will see in the Gemara itself. Double underlines appear, and they are, and we've written shlavim. These are stages, kedei lahasbir, in order to explain ha dikotoni, that which the Mishnah teaches, shtei einov lemalo, shtei einov lemato. Literally, two eyes are above, or two eyes below. Now, the Gemara. The top line, at the end of the line, shtei einov lemalo, shtei einov lemato. That's a quote from the Mishnah. Ma, what is meant by shtei einov lemalo, shtei einov lemato? You'll notice that we have a long question marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, a shin that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line, indicating that all of these upcoming lines form the question, and then the answer itself takes a few lines as well, as is illustrated. So the Gemara asks, what is meant by this? Now, e-lema, if you are going to explain it as follows, shtei einov lemala equals dechozi lemala, that he sees, his eyes are, let's say, turned upwards, that he sees above. In other words, he doesn't see straight ahead, but the eyes are positioned in a normal place, and shtei einov lemato equals, that it means dechozi lemato, that he sees below, that he looks below, his eyes are positioned in such a way that he sees only that which is below. Eino achas lemalo v'eino achas lemato means dechozi eino achas lemato v'eino achas lemalo, that his eyes are positioned that one eye sees above and one eye sees below. If that would be the explanation, then there would be a redundancy, because hainu, that would be the same as roya es hacheder v'esualiyah ke'achas, which is also described in the Mishnah. So we have to offer an explanation that won't cause redundancy. So that, once again, the Mishnah having said eino achas lemalo v'eino achas lemato, if that's a matter of field of vision, well then that would be repeated when it says he sees the room and he sees the upper story at the same time. Ela. So now we give an explanation of what the Mishnah really means. And this takes a few lines, as the long answer marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text indicates. Ela, shtei einov lemalo, means dekaimon lemalo. Notice we've added this dashed underline to the word dekaimon, so you can contrast this with the dashed underline that we saw under the elemo explanation, four lines from the top, where it said dechazi. Dechazi would refer to a field of vision. Here, it's a physical positioning of the eyes in one's skull. So the accepted shot then is shtei einov lemalo means the kaimon lemalo, that the eye sockets are located higher up in the head of this individual than is normally found by people. And shtei einov lemato, the kaimon lemato, that they are located lower on the head than regular people. Eino achas lemalo veino achas lemato means the kaimi eino achas lemalo veino achas lemato. One of his eyes is set in on his head, high up, and the other one is set low on the skull. The kaimi kesidron nami, a situation where his eyes are physically located in his head at a normal position. However, veroya es hacheder ves haliok achas, that is also a problem, that he sees that his field of vision is such that one eye sees like the area he's in, the cheder, the room that he's in. It means he has a field of vision pointing straight ahead, and the other eye is positioned, focused on above. But the position of the eyes in his head are normal. But since his direction of vision is out of kilt, that also constitutes a post sale, a reason for him being disqualified from service. Mino hani mili detonu rabbona. What is the mokar for that which we have been teaching? So the brisa, this Tanaic source, makes a reference to a pasuk that we've included on the side of the Gemara. The psukim referred to are from the Sefer Vayikra, Perek Chof Aleph. We've included psukim starting from Perek Pasuk Yud Ches, but the immediate reference here is to a pasuk Chof, where it says, O Gibain, O Dak, O Tavlul, Bi'einoi, O Gorav, O Yalefes, O Muroach Oshech. In the pasuk we see Gibain, Dak, Tavlul, and the word Bi'eino. The Brisa now says, Bi'eino, Kol Ma Shebe'eino. All problems that affect eyes will disqualify a person. Mikan Omru. Now, what do we mean by all problems? From this, we say the following. And here you see, with numbers, we've listed five different phenomena that are learned from this. Shtei Einov Lamato. Shtei Einov Lamalo. Two eyes above, two eyes below. Eino Achas Lamato, Eino Achas Lamato. One eye above, one eye below. The roya es acher v'saliyo ka'achas, or the eyes are positioned normally, but his field of vision is out of kilt, where he sees at the same time one eye is looking above and one eye is looking ahead. Oy shemedaber im chaveroi v'acher oimer li roe, or someone is talking to someone and someone else gets the feeling that the speaker is looking at him, so that the eyes are not focused on the point that they should be focused. Tanu Rabbanan. We continue with another Tanaic source. As you can see, it too is in a frame. And this is a quote from the Pasuk that we made reference to before. This is Pasuk Yud Ches. You can see it's on the side. Ki chol ish asher bo mum lo yikrav ish iver oi pisach o chorum o sorua. So the word iver means bein suma b'shtei einov, bein suma b'achas me'einov. The Rashi says on the word iver, and this will come up a little bit later in the Gemara, but Rashi mentions something about the eye being removed. generally speaking, the word iver has to do with blindness. So if we just use this, the common translation of the word, this Gemara would be saying whether he's blind in both eyes or blind in one eye. Chavarvor v'hamayim hakvuiminayim. Where do we know these phenomenon as well? Chavarvor and mayim kvuim. These are things that we have discussed in the we've discussed these in the previous perek. For our purposes, as we mentioned on previous occasions, it's not essential to translate them, but simply to note that they are eye problems. And our question right now is, where do we know them to be a problem? From where in terms of the psukim? Talmud Lomar, ish iver. The word ish in this pasuk comes to marbe these additional problems of chavavor and mayim kvuim. Omar Rova, Lomali dekosav rachmona ish iver, dak tavlul be'eno. Three different problems. Why does the Torah have to specify each one of them as being disqualifying characteristics? In Gemaras like this, the feeling is, would it not have been enough to state one and I could have figured out the others? So the Gemara goes on now to answer this with a tsrifi, which we refer to as a long point. The point is, the Gemara here is making a point of why each one was necessary. So you can see this marking on the side of to meet the right hand side of the Gemara text, a long point marking, which is a nun indicating a nekuda and a vertical dashed descending dashed line, that all of these lines form the need. And we've also, under our Nosei heading, indicated this as our topic. In the outside margin, we've written under the Nosei, Hezber, an explanation, Lomo Kosva HaTorah, why the Torah bothers writing Kol HaMumim HaShonim HaShayachim Beinayim, that the Torah has to enumerate each one of the different eye deficiencies that it does. So we now go into the Gemara Tzrichi. It is necessary. And you can see the squiggle underlining features at each point where the Gemara is saying, if it would have said just one, what I would have thought. The Ikosav Rachmona Iver, had the Torah written that Iver is a problem, that's Mishum Delesnu Klal. And this we referred to before, but Rashi says that the word Iver implies that the person's eyeball is not there. It's completely absent. Not just a function of deficient eyesight, but it's the eyeball isn't there. So that's a very serious deficiency. So had the Torah written Iver, that's the problem. I would have said is because the lesnu klal, it's not there at all. Avol chavar vor v'hamayim hakvuim. These two phenomenon, the isnuhu bei lo. The eyeballs are there. It's simply there's a problem with his eyesight, but the eyeballs are present. Therefore, kosav rachmona ish. Therefore, the word ish was necessary to indicate that chavava and mayim kvuim are also a problem. The e kosav rachmona ish, had the Torah written ish, mishum de lo chozi klal. As a result of chavavo or mayim kvuim, he doesn't have any eyesight. Once again, the eyes are there, but he doesn't have eyesight. Avol machsuraisa lo. Machsuraisa, the root of that word is choser, meaning deficient eyesight. He sees a bit, as Rashi says, but it's choser, it's lacking. I would have thought maybe that's not a problem. Kosav rachmona dak. Therefore, the Torah makes a reference to dak, which is a situation where there's a speck on the eye, which reduces his eyesight quality, but it's not, but it's the eyeball is there. Because of Rachmona dak, had the Torah written dak, so mishum de mechasran, it's a problem because it reduces his eyesight. Avo mevalbelisa lo, mevalbelisa is a reference to the word in the Torah, tavlul, where there's a mixing of the white of the eye enters the the dark part of the eye. But the actual eyesight is not affected. In other words, you look at his eye, so you see something is strange, but his eyesight is not affected. So had the Torah written just dak, that does affect eyesight. Mevabalisa does not. Therefore, kosav rachmona tavlul. The Torah had to write tavlul, otherwise I wouldn't have known that to be a disqualifying feature. The e kosav rachmona tavlul, had the Torah written that, so mishum de mevalbalon, there is a mixing. We said the white is mixed into the dark of the eye. Avol mishum mishanyusa lo, but because of a strange positioning of eyeballs in the head. In other words, as we described at the opening of our shiur, the two eyes, the eyeballs or eye sockets are located high up on the head. So that doesn't mean that his eyesight is affected at all. He might have 20/20 vision, just his eyeballs are located high up on his skull. So I wouldn't have known that to be a problem. Therefore, kosav rachmona be'eino. Therefore, the Torah wrote the word be'eino to include that case. Omar Rova, Hilkoch, kol machmas kiyusa, problems that are a function of kiyusa, Rashi says he doesn't have any vision. Asya me'ish, that will be learned from the word ish in our pasuk. Mach suraisa, where there is vision but it's deficient, that's midak, that's learned from the word dak. Mevalbalisa, where there is a problem of the eye colors being mixed one in the other, that's mitavlul. And mishanyusa, the unusual positioning of the eyeballs, that's mibe'eno. That's learned from the word eino in the pasuk. Continuing in the Gemara, soche shemesh, Toni Rav Yosef, Sone Shemesh. Rav Yosef explains that Soche Shemesh means, Sone means hates, which means he can't tolerate looking at the sun at all. Zagdion. This is a word that was found in the Mishnah on Mem Gimel Omid Beis. Machvi Rav Huna demonstrates, he shows, he points out what the zagdion is. He says, Chad Mididon, one of ours, our eyes, the person who has an eye like ours, the Chad Mididhu, and one like his. And when Rav Huna was speaking, Rav Yehuda was sitting in front of him. And Rav Yehuda apparently had something unusual about his eyes. And so Rav Huna was saying that if you want to understand what a Zagdion is, understand it's someone that has one of our eyes and one like his. The Ikbid Rav Yehuda. And Rav Yehuda was upset, or he was insulted or embarrassed, because he was used to demonstrate something that's unusual. Meisve, we have a Tanaic source that we're going to raise as a question. Shachavno, what is a shachavno? It's shegvinov shochvim. His eyebrows are very long and lie over his eyes. Zagdum. Now, zagdum is what we are focusing on. Echad shochor ve'echad lavan. One is black and the other is white. So you see that zagdum is a function of some type of color oddity, where the one eye has one color characteristic, and maybe is a reference to the eyebrows. The Shita Mekubetzes, he adds that in Ois Gimel, the Shita Mekubetzes is Shegvinov, which is the eyebrows, Echad Shachar ve'Echad Lavan. Well, that's a question, isn't it? That's not what Rav Huna was demonstrating. So the Gemara answers, Tana, the Tana calls Zuga de lo Shavi, any pair that aren't similar to one another, de lo Shavi lahavdodi, Zagdum kori lei. The term Zagdum applies. So the word Zagdum is a general expression to be a situation where the pair don't resemble one another. So Rav Huna was demonstrating a phenomenon that could be described as Zagdum, just like the Brisa describes another form of Zagdum. The Mishnah mentioned Hatsirun. So we have the Gemara explains, elaborates on this, Tana, Einov Trutos Vitsirunios Doimois Dolphos Tordos. We've broken up this source really into two categories. You have the Roman numeral number 1, and Aleph and Beis is Einov Trutos Tsirunios. Trutos are round. A normal shape of an eye, we could say, is almond-shaped. But the person who has Einov Trutos, this is a type of mum. They're round, and Tsirunios, Rashi says, are even rounder than Trutos. So that's why we've put these two words together. Trutos and Tsirunios describe roundness. And now, the second part of this source describes a teariness. Domos is slight teariness, dolphos is more than domos, and tordos is more than dolphos. So we've categorized them as Aleph, Beis, and Gimel under Roman numeral number 2. So in this Brisa that we just read, we see Tsirunios, which is what we saw in the Mishnah, Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, the word Tsirun, which has to do with roundness. Tana, Af Hazovir Vehalupin Vehatomir. And the Gemara explains, Zovir de Mozor Einei. This seems to be a twitch that he has. Lupin de Nefishin Zife. And Tomir Shetomu Zifin. Lupin is, he has very long eyelashes. And the Zipe, the Tomir is, he has no eyelashes. The Gemara continues with a question. Vehani Gabi Mumin Tanu Luhu? Are you suggesting that these are under the Mum category? Vehotnan, but we have another Mishnah that says Vishenoshru Rise Einov. This is actually a Mishnah that we've seen. That says Shenoshu Rise Einov Posim Le Maris Ho'ayin. So here the eyelashes are described as having fallen out, and it's categorized not as a mum, but rather as Maris Ho'ayin. And as we mentioned in the opening part of our shiur today, that these represent different categories of disqualification. So by describing the Zovir. The Lupin and the Tomir as being something that is a description of a Mum, when we see that the Tomir should be classified as something that's Maris Ho'ayin. So the Gemara answers, Lo Kashya, Ha De Ishtayer Gardumi, Ha De Lo Ishtayer Gardumi. There's a difference between the lacking of the eyelash roots versus where the eyelash roots are present, and just the superficial eyelash is missing. So that if it's Ishtayer Gardumi, where the roots are there, so then it's not a mum, it's Maris Ho'ayin. If, however, Lo Ishtayer Gardumi, the root is ripped out, is pulled out also, that is classified as a mum. the Mishnah. Einov gedolos kishel egel, oktanos kishel avos. Unusual size eyes. Either large like a calf or small like a goose. Gufo godol me'evorov, okoton me'evorov. Disproportionate size between body and limbs. Either the body is much larger than his limbs, or it's much smaller than his limbs, proportionately. Chaitmoy godol me'evorov, okoton me'evorov, or a nose that's of disproportionate size, either too large or too small. Hatsomeim vehatsomea. Ezehu tsomea. Sheoznov ktanos, very small ears. Vehatsomeim. Sheoznov doimois lisfoig, where the ears are resemble a sponge. Sfoso yona odevas al tachtona, a lip, upper lip that extends beyond the lower one. Vatachtoina odevas al holyona, or the lower one extends beyond the upper one. Hare ze mum. That is classified as a blemish. Vishinotlu shinov, one who doesn't have teeth. Pusul mitnei maris hoayin. He is classified as someone who is unfit because of maris hoayin, which we saw on previous occasions is a different category, a less severe category than something that you would call a mum. Before going on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading that introduces this piece, the Nose, and it says, Moshe Rabbeinu hoya gavoa eser amos. Moshe Rabbeinu stood at a height of 10 amos. Avol ein lefaresh, but we are not to explain shehu hoyo eser pam ho'amo hayad sheloi. The word amo is a reference to an arm length from the middle finger to one's elbow. That's called an amo. Generally speaking, and we'll go on in our note, we are not to say that Moshe Rabbeinu's height was 10 of his arm lengths. De'oz yehei hu baal mum. If you do say that, you're then making him into a blemished individual. De'ein b'nei odom regilim elo sholosh amos ba'amois shelahen. The normal proportion when dealing with people is a 3-to-1 ratio between body and arm length. That you would take a person's arm, as we said, from middle finger to elbow, which we call an amo, and multiply that by 3. That will give you generally a person's height from floor to shoulder. So when Moshe Rabbeinu is described as being 10 amos, we have to do some explaining over here. What do you mean that he was 10 amos? If you are to say it means he was 10 of his own arm lengths, that, as we said, would make him disproportionate in size. Disproportionate in size meaning relative to his limbs, his limb-body ratio that we said has to be normal in order for someone not to be considered blemished. So we'll explain that as we go on in the Gemara. Omar Rav, Moshe Rabbeinu, Eser Amos Hoya. An amo is often a figure given to that. An amo is a half a meter, so he would have been 5 meters in height, a rather tall individual by our standards. But Moshe Rabbeinu was described as Eser Amos. Shenemar, how do we know that he had that height? The Pasuk says in the construction of the Mishkan, which were made of upright boards and covered with large sheets of fabric and other materials, it says, Vayifrois es ha'oil al ha'mishkan. And he spread the oil, the covering, over the Mishkan, which was the predecessor of the Beis HaMikdash. This was the portable temple, portable sanctuary that the Jews had during their stay in the Midbar. And it was made of boards that surrounded an area forming a rectangle in shape, and it was covered with sheets of material or fabric. So the Pasuk says, and he covered the Mishkan. Well, mi parso, who did that? Answer, Moshe Rabbeinu Parso. He put the coverings over the top of the Mishkan. Uksiv, and it also says, Esther Amos Urech HaKeresh. The Keresh, the boards that formed the walls of the Mishkan, had a height of 10 Amos. And with that, we figure that Moshe Rabbeinu had a height of 10 Amos, enabling him to do this. Amar Le Rav Simi Bar Chio Le Rav. Im Kain, Rav Simi says to Rav, he says, if this is so, that you're telling me that Moshe Rabbeinu was 10 Amos, Asiso Le Moshe Rabbeinu Baal Mum. You're making him into a blemished individual. You're describing him as such. Disnan, our Mishnah teaches, Gufoi Godol Me'evorov or Kotan Me'evorov. Someone whose body is in disproportionate size to his limbs, either too large or too small, that's a mum. And we know, and this is not stated in the Gemara, but it's a given, it's a fact, that normalcy is a body limb, but with regard to the arm, a 3-to-1 ratio. If you tell me that Moshe Rabbeinu was 10 amos, the word amo means an arm length. So his body was 10 times his arm length. So on a proportional level, his body was of disproportionate size to his own limb, to his arm. Omar lay, so Rav responds, and says, Simi at, are you the great Simi? You should know, the answer is, Be'amo shokeresh ko'omar. Let us glance at the Rashi. Be'amo shokeresh, or shokodesh ko'amino. Dahainu eser amo, he had a height of 10 amos, ba'amo shel keresh. The Oyrech HaKroshim lo nimdad ba'amoso shel Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu's height was 10 keresh amos. The beam, the upright beams that formed the wall of the Mishkan were measured in terms of 10 amos, but not Moshe Rabbeinu's arm length, 10 regular arm lengths of regular sized people. That was the height of the Keresh. As far as Moshe Rabbeinu's height and arm length are concerned, his personal arm length was in fact a third of his own height. But the Keresh was not measured in terms of Moshe Rabbeinu arm lengths. In other words, this Gemara is not making any reference to the arm length of Moshe Rabbeinu. All that was said is that the height of Moshe Rabbeinu was 10 amos of Keresh amos. Keresh amos, as we said, were normal or regular-sized people's arm lengths, which, generally speaking, without getting into fine machlokasim, is measured in terms of 6 tfachim, 6 handbreadths, 6 regular people's handbreadths would equal an amo. And hence the keresh would be 10 of those, we could say is 60 regular tfachim. Now when you want to describe Moshe Rabbeinu himself, so it's true he was 10 amos in height. What kind of amo? Not his own arm in measuring his body, but rather he was 10 conventional amos in height. As far as Moshe Rabbeinu's own arm length is concerned, his own arm length was in fact much greater than common regular people's arm length, and his height was three, you could assume, was 3 times his personal arm length, thereby being proportional in size regarding Moshe Rabbeinu himself. Continuing in the Gemara. Chot moy godol v'chulei. The nose, one's nose larger than others. How much larger? Tana, the Brisa explains, ke'etzba ketana. If one's nose is an etzba ketana in size, a small finger greater, that it would be a problem. Now we look at the Rashi, ke'etzba ketana. Im choytmoy godol lefi shar evorin. Let's read that again. im chotmo gadol lefi shar evarov yoiser midai kishur roichav etzba ketana havimum veheichi misharin odlei moididin chotmoi lechotem bnei adam ha'arukim begufan kamohu. You would take his personal height, compare him, a person of that height, to other people, and then you compare his nose size relative to other people who have the same height and their nose size, so that if this individual's nose size is a small finger larger than a small finger in size larger than his peers, that would be a mum. Hatsimeim vehatsema tono af hatsimeach. The Brisa says a tsimeach is also a problem. So we have different expressions that need some explanations. We've got a tsimeim, a tsema, and a tsimeach. Lo havu yadi rabbonon my tsimeach. The rabbonon didn't know what that was. Shamu lahu tayo, they heard an Arab, Davuka Omar, that was announcing, man boi tsimeach. Who wants a tsimeach? Vishtakach gadyo haziza. And they found that the Arab was describing a goat with exceptionally long ears. So that the Arab helped them understand what a tsimeach is. It's a situation of exceptionally long ears. Amar Rav Chisda, Eiz she'ein lo karnayim, ve'rochel she'esh lo karnayim, k'sheirim l'gabi mizbeach. Here there are two freakish situations described. And that is of a goat that doesn't have horns when a goat normally has, or a sheep that has horns when it normally does not. Those don't constitute a mum, and hence they are kosher, they're acceptable, even as a sacrifice on the altar. Tanya Nami Hochi, we have a Tanaic source that supports this. Yesh dvarim shem ki mumin, v'einon mumin, v'shochtem le b'mikdosh avolo b'medina. There are things that are like blemishes, but they're not. And as a result of that, if they're sacrifices, they can be slaughtered in the Beis HaMikdash, and those same animals would not be allowed to be slaughtered outside in the Medina, outside the Beis HaMikdash. The Elohein, and the following are descriptions of that. Eiz she'ein lo karnayim, a goat that has no horns. V'rochel she'esh lo karnayim, or a sheep that has horns. V'hatzimeach, v'hatzimeim, v'hatzomeah. And these things as well. The Mishnah had described already the tzomeah as being small-eared, and the tzomeim as having ears that have a sponge look to them. Omar Rav Chisda, Omar Avimi. Notlu karnoison v'zachruson imohen psula. V'ein niftes alehem. The expression ein niftes alehem, it cannot be redeemed. This is a point that refers to other sacrifices other than a firstborn. A firstborn male animal is something that cannot be redeemed under any circumstances. Sacrifices are things that, when they develop a blemish, lend themselves to redemption, where the sanctity that they have is transferred to money. However, if an animal is not blemished, it cannot be, it's not allowed to be redeemed. So Rav Chisda mentions that an animal that, let's say a goat that ordinarily has horns, and its horns are removed with the zachrusim, with the inset bone as well, that renders it pusul. It cannot be offered as a sacrifice on the altar. However, it cannot be redeemed. It's not something that lends itself to being redeemed. The Rashi under Dibur Masel Zachruson, across from here, he says, Hainu etzem hatochuv besocha karnai. That's the inset bone. So that you have external horn material, and inside of that there's this bone. The comment continues of Rav Chisda, Notlu tlafayim v'zachruson imohem, if the hooves have been removed, and together with their inset bone, psulin v'nivdin alehem, they're posel, and they can be redeemed as well. They lend themselves to, that's a level of problem that enables it to be redeemed. The Gemara now asks, Meisvei, notlu karnayin utlafayim, v'zachruson imohen, the horns or hooves have been removed with their inset bones, psulin v'nifdin alehem. So we've dashed underlined the main problem. Karnayim, and karnayim with inset bone, niftin, is redeemable. What did Rav Chisa say about karnayim and inset bone? Well, he said, you can also look back at the dash underline regarding that, he said, not redeemable. That's a problem. So the Gemara answers, lo ikashya, ha de is akur is akuri, ha de egum agumi. Rashi explains Braisa Dikotoni. The Braisa that mentioned there is a redemption possibility, Bidi Akuri, Karnayim, Vishroshe Hazachrus, the horns, and the roots of the inset bone. In other words, there's a lacking inside the animal's skull, as Rashi says, Veneres Gumo Barosh, there is a depression, a hole that appears in its head as a result of the uprooting of the inset bone. Rav Chisda's case, however, is the Egum Agumi, where the horn has been cut away level with the head, which includes some of the inset bone, but the root is still in place. So we'll call it a superficial removal, not cutting into the roots of the inset bone. The Gemara now continues in questioning. It says, "Ude egum egumi mi posla." If something is removed in that fashion, where it's cut at the surface, does that ruin the raw minhu? We have a contradictory source. This source deals with the pora aduma, the red heifer, the red cow that was used for purification from Tumas Mace, where the Pora Aduma was eventually slaughtered and burnt, and its ashes mixed with water for purification of Tomei Mace. Regarding the Pora Aduma, there is an insistence that it be red in color, all of it. So the source says, Pora shekarnel tlofel shcharim yagud, a Pora Aduma whose horns and hooves are black, yagud, must be cut away. Now, a paraduma has to be, if you want to have a kosher paraduma, you can't have any disqualifying features to it. So, if you say, like Rav Chisda was saying, that it's if it's been igumagumi, meaning it's been cut away without uprooting, it renders it puzzle. How could you do this to a paraduma and expect to still use it? The Gemara answers, Tirguma Ze'iri. Ze'iri explains this source by the paraduma that said Yagud is Me'ilui Zachrus. Looking at the Rashi at the bottom, Tirguma Ze'iri, Hai Dekatoni Yachtoch, that which the source says cut away, it said Yagud, which is the same idea. That's Me'iluye Zachusayu. That's above, from above, the inset bone. Sheesh B'chudo Shel Keren Kishtayim V'shol Shetzbo She'ein Zachus Magia Sham. The inset bone, although it's parallel to most of the height of the horn, the tip of the horn, though, is at a point where there is no longer the zachrus, the inset bone. The inset bone doesn't reach that high or to that extent in the horn. V'mashachrus ein magia ad mokum azachrus. Yachtoich, the source with the paraduma is saying that if the blackness is only at the tip of the horn, where it doesn't reach the level of the inset bone, that can be removed and doesn't create any psul. But more than that, as Rashi says, but more than that would result in a psul, psula, or there's a girsa that reads it as mifsala. We now continue on Omid Beis, Mem Dalet Omid Beis, at the top where we have a new Mishnah. Dodin Shochvin Kishelisha, we're describing a man, a Kohen, and he has breasts that are large, and they create an impression like that of a woman. Kreso Tsava, a large or bloated belly. Tiburo Yotze, a navel that is protruding. Nichpe, afilu achas liyomim. Nichpe is described as a falling sickness. Rashi says, nofel machmas holy, possibly related to epilepsy, which has that characteristic, but we can't guarantee that. We, in our Gemara markings, Shirim, do not engage in emphasis on translations. So we leave that to further investigation. And the Mishnah is saying that even if it's not that regular, it's only once every couple of days, Rashi says, achas liyomim, she'eno nofel todir, elapam achas liyomim, she'tovo lizman kavua. It seems to be someone who has an attack, a falling attack, once every several days at a fixed time. That is a problem. Ruach katsra ba'olov. Rashi says, ruach shei. He's overcome by some type of force, some type of disturbance. A shade is a demon, so a demonic spirit comes over him. Hame'ushbon. This is someone whose testicles are exceptionally large. Ubal gever. This is his male organ is exceptionally large. Omer Rabbi Abba, Reid Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Mashtinin Mayim Bifnei Rabim, V'ein Shoysin Mayim Bifnei Rabim. He makes 2 points, and we have a topic heading actually that we feature on the side of the Gemara. Ein Lihisakev Milahashtin. A person should not delay in urinating. Afilu im tzorach lahashtin rabim, even if it means that he has to urinate in public. The Gemara has a very strong plea to people not to withhold their need for matil me raglayim, for urination. On the other hand, it says that one should not drink in public, drink water in public. So the Rashi says, ve'ein shoysin mayim dederech talmid chacham lios tzanua b'achil v'shtia. It is the way of a Torah sage to be humble, private in his eating and his drinking. Avol lahatil mayim lo levit sinua shema yamtin v'yistakein. But when it comes to urination, one should not practice this tzniyus, which is privacy, we'll say, if it's going to possibly result in delaying until he finds a private location, because that delay could be endangering. Okay. Could be dangerous. Continuing in the Gemara, Tanyo Nami Hochi, Mashtinin Mayim Bifnei Rabim, V'ein Shoysin Mayim Bifnei Rabim. When it comes to the relief of the Mei Raglayim, one should do that, even if it means he has to do it in public and not delay. However, one should not drink in public. From Rashi, one might get the feeling that this is really an instruction directed at Talmidei Chachamim. On the other hand, one could think that it's an address to the general public, and that people should practice as if they were Talmidei Chachamim. Continuing in the Gemara, Umaisen be'echod shebikesh lashin mayim velo hishtin. An incident happened where he needed to relieve himself and didn't. V'nimtza kreisot tzava, and it resulted in his belly becoming bloated. Shmuel itzterich lei b'shabata derigla. Shmuel needed to relieve himself on the Shabbos that was either Shabbos of a holiday. Rashi says it's a reference to 30 days before a holiday, where one would go to hear a public drosha on the upcoming holiday. So Shmuel was a public figure, holding forth on the holiday laws, and he needed to relieve himself. Nagdu le glimo, they set up a type of curtain. A glimo is an article of clothing usually, but here it's a sheet. It's a reference to a sheet. They spread out a sheet, and he relieved himself in a private sense, where it wasn't visible that he was relieving himself. Also, lekamei davua, Shmuel came to his father. His father was a very great Talmudic figure in his own right, known as Avua de Shmuel. Amalei, so his father says, etein loch dalid mea zuzi, I would give you 400 zuz, it's a lot of money, vizil ahader uvda, and go back and tell them that it's usur to delay. What is he referring to here? The Gemara itself explains, at the efshaloch, you who happen to have the sheet available, so you didn't have to delay at all, the sheet was there, and you were able to relieve yourself. Delo efshalei l'stakein, someone who doesn't have a sheet. In looking at your behavior, people would think that you, in order to relieve yourself, you have to do it in a private fashion, and that I would have to delay to get a sheet. So you, who happen to have a sheet, were able to do it privately without any delay. But people seeing you would think that the main thing is to do it in private, even if it amounts to delay. And that is wrong, because that could lead to sakona, to danger. Therefore, his father, Avuah de Shmuel, told Shmuel, go and let it be known that even if you don't have a sheet, you still are expected to relieve yourself, even if you happen to be in a public setting. And we're talking here about matil meraglim, urination. And now we have a story that on the surface of things would be a phenomenal illustration of how far one would go in this area. Mar Bravashi, Havishokil V'Oziel, Aguda Gamla. Mar Bravashi was walking along a Guda Gamla, might be a reference to a type of board or plank bridge. Itzterich, he needed to relieve himself. Havakomashtin, and he relieved himself right there. And it's an open situation. Omru Le, Chamoscha Kaasya. They told Mar Bravashi, your mother-in-law is coming. So you would assume that he would want to hide himself or continue whatever he's doing here in a private fashion. After all, his mother-in-law is on the way. Omar Lahu, Mar Bravashi said, Be'udna. Be'udna means in her ear. Well, Rashi, we won't take any chances on our own. We must look at Rashi. Ve'udno, afilu besoich ozno, ha'isi matil mayim. Now, all we're going to do is translate what it says here. We're going to leave it to you, the listening audience, to come to your own conclusions or research it further with proper rabbinic literature. But the translation of this Rashi says, even in her ear, I would have urinated. Im lo hoyali mokom acher koidem, if I didn't have any other place to do it, she'amtin, that otherwise I would have had to wait. The kol shekein bifonan, certainly, if it's a matter of her seeing me do this, that doesn't bother me in the slightest, because I know that if it's a question of delaying the act of urination in order for her not to see me, that would result in a delay that I'm not prepared to do. We have a semicolon here because this question is a reference to something mentioned earlier. And you'll notice we have a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text that can be aligned with the arrow above. above, it said that there was a person with a bloated belly, and the bloated belly was associated in the source with his non-urination. A person who needed to urinate and didn't, so it would result in a bloated belly. The Gemara asks, "V'tepuk li mishum aluka." That which the individual above had a bloated belly, maybe it's because he drank an aluka. I've seen this translated in other places as a water leech. But whatever the case is, it's some type of organism that if a person swallows it, it will lead to a bloated belly. And if that be the case, so then we don't see any relationship between kreset sova and lack of urination. So the Gemara answers, the source above was describing a case b'shoises. He was, water was emerging, urine was emerging from him in a dripping fashion. Rashi says, b'shoises she'enu yochel lahatil mayim yofe la'achar kein elo shoises tipin tipin. He's not able to release the water in a strong fashion, in a strong flow, rather in a dripping fashion. Devadai machmas ikuv shesen havi lei. This phenomenon of his inability to urinate in a regular strong flow is a function of his having delayed. So we're dealing with a bloated belly individual with this additional feature of the shesen, the urine emerging in a slow dripping fashion. So that's not aluka related. That's clearly a function of his having withheld the need to relieve himself. Tanu Rabbanan, shnei nekovim yesh boi ba'adam. In this area of the anatomy of the male anatomy, there are two holes or cubes, echod motzi shesen, the echod motzi shichvazera. One through one tube there flows urine, and through the other tube flows semen. The ein bein ze lo ze elo keklipas hashum. The wall separating these two tubes within the human being is a membrane as thin as the peel of a garlic. B'shah she'adam nitzrach. Im nokvo ze letoch ze nimsa akur. If this wall would be pierced, nikvo is a hole in the wall between these two tubes. If that happened when a person needed to relieve himself, it would result in his becoming impotent. It would render him incapable of procreation. Amar Reish Lakish, my dichtiv. Lo ye b'cho okor v'akoro uviv hem techo. This pasuk makes a reference to impotency in people and in animals, and we just saw a reference to this in the source just before this. So here we expound on this a bit. Amosai lo ye b'cho okor. Under what circumstances will a person not experience avoid impotency? Bizman shebivhem techa. Rashi explains, Bizman shebivhem techa shetosim asmocha kebehema. When a person conducts himself like an animal, shelotet sanua batolas mayim, that he doesn't practice privacy when it comes to urination. So, as people know, even if they happen to be city dwellers, they know that when a dog needs to relieve himself, it relieves himself wherever he is. So too, a person is expected to behave in a behemoth fashion. In other words, no delay. Omar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, "Lo ye b'cho akar." He is also darshaning the pasuk we just saw. The The Shita Megubetzes adds a couple of words here. Shalotehe beischa akur min hatamidim. That the pasuk is describing that your house will not be without students. The akara shalotehe tfiloscha akura lifnei hamakom. That your prayers will not be barren in the presence of the Almighty. Amosai, when can one expect to merit these blessings? Bizman shato mesim atzmecha kibehema. When a person makes himself like a behema. The Rashi on this comments, Shalotei tfiloscha akura, ukshetispalel albonim, tehei nishmas tfiloscha, and that when you pray for children, your prayers will be hearkened. Kebehema shalotamtin milahatil mayim, that a person should not delay in relieving himself. Let us glance at the Tosfos on this Shalotei Tfiloscha Akura Lefnei Hamakom Bizman Shata Meisim Atzmo Gebehema Pirush Bekontras Shalotei Akura Kishata Mispal Al Bonim. The Rashi focused this on one who prays for children, that he expects his Tfiloh to be answered, so he has to be a person that doesn't delay in urination. Tosfos says, "V'nira de lechol tefila komar." Tosfos has a different approach and says that this drasha is really a reference to all prayers, not just prayers for children. Kid Omar, as is said in Maseches Chulin, "She'ein ha'olam miskayim elo b'misha meisim atzmo kebehema." The world is sustained by those who make themselves like animals. Animals in a sense of humility. Kidachtiv Adam ubehema toshia Hashem. Uvemisha meisim atzmo kemisha eino. And similarly, the world sustains itself, is based on those that make themselves like they are not. In other words, extreme humility. Kidachtiv toila eretz al belima. Belima is darshan as belima. The world is dependent on the humble in spirit. So, according to Rashi, it seems, we'll say, a practical type situation where if you're praying for children, so you can't pray and behave in a way that physically you will prevent yourself from having children. And we're getting a sense in this Gemara that restrains himself from urination will cause himself to suffer impotency. Tosfos, though, is saying that the reference to a behema is a general concern of humility. Someone who is humble, so all his prayers will have a chance of being answered. Continuing in the Gemara, Amar Rav Papa, Lo yashtin oda mayim, lo agabi klei cheres, velo agabi mokum koshe. Before going on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading on the outside margin. Under the Noseh heading, we've written, Bebovel yesh lahakpid lahashtin b'mokom shibola bo'adoma. In Bovel, a person should be careful to find a place to urinate in absorbent ground. And other points we will see here are chaloyim haboyim mimi shemisakev mila hitpanot. Illnesses that come as a result of someone who restrains himself from relieving himself from body waste. So now the Gemara. Amar Rav Papa, lo yashtin odom mayim loy al gabi klei cheres velo al gabi mokum kosher. A person should not urinate on earthenware, the earthenware being non-absorbent, and not on hard ground. The Omar Rav, Hani Madure de Bovel, the slopes in Bovel, hills and slopes in Bavel. Mahadri Maya Le'en Etam, the runoff from those places, the runoff in case of rain, and if one urinates, ends up in a spring in Eretz Yisrael known as Ein Etam. And this was the water supply for the Beis Hamikdash. So you can imagine what the Gemara is concerning itself with. We don't want to have urine being mixed in to what eventually becomes the water supply of the Beis Hamikdash. Omar Abaye, Hai Itza Lo Sokum Lehedya Ba'anpi Yenuka. A woman who needs to relieve herself should not do so directly in front of her child. Agisa less lawn ball, but off to the side, that's okay. Tanya Shumal Omer, Omud Hachozer, Mevi Odom Lidei Hadroikin. Omud is a reference to solid waste. A person who, in the course of his relieving himself, doesn't allow himself to completely evacuate. So that can bring a person to Hadroken, which is a digestive, a stomach disorder. Silon hachozer, and likewise with regard to with the urine that is withheld, maybe odom lidei yerokon, another type of disease. Omrav katinam reish lakish, dam rabo, shchin rabo. If a person, let us say, needs to go through the Gemara medical procedure known as bloodletting, and he doesn't do it so that his blood supply increases, this will lead to shchin. Shchin, often translated as boils. Shichvas zera rabo, tzaras rabo. If a person is married and he doesn't conduct himself in conjugal relations, this results in increasing chances of tzaras, or there'll be a lot of tzaras. Tzoa rabo, hedroikin rabo. Tzoa, we saw a reference just before in the Tanaic source, solid waste that increases, that is withheld in a person. So it results in hedroikin. Meiraglayim rovin, yorokon rabo. Likewise, with regard to the urine withholding, it increases the chances of experiencing yorokin. Ruach katsus ba alav mai nihu. The Gemara asks, what is meant by ruach katsus? We saw in the Mishnah, and we offered an explanation there, indicating some type of demonic possession. So the Gemara says, Tana ruach ben niflim ba alav. Ben niflim is the name of this spirit that overtakes him or possesses a person. That's described as ruach katsris. And a kohen that experiences this demonic possession would be unfit for serving. Hamushman ubal gever tana mushuban bebeitzim. This is something referring to testicles. We said it was exceptionally large ones. Bal gever is an expression that is a reference to begid, the organ. Tana mushuban ze hakayin. Meshuban is known as Kayin. Hagarvison ze Baal Kik. He's also known as a Baal Kik. Kayin bebeitim, Garvisa begid. It seems that the words used here are like alternative expressions for that which we have mentioned before that were known to the Gemara. So the Kayin, which was associated with Meshuban, and we saw above, Meshuban was Bebeitzim, so too, Kayin by definition is Bebeitzim. And likewise, the Garvasa is Begid. Garvasa is, we saw above, Baal Gever, with a little letter switch, it seems to be a similar expression. The Ad Kamo, when we speak about the male organ being large, how large are we saying that would result in it constituting a blemish? Machvi Rav Yehuda ad Rekuva. So Rav Yehuda demonstrator made a motion, well, if it reaches to his knee. Tanya, Rav Lezer ben Yankiv Omer, ad Rekuva pasul, lemala min harekuva kosher. If it reaches at a point to the knee, that would render him unfit, but above that, it's okay. Ta'ika de Amri, another version of this is ad rukuva kosher. Even if it reaches the knee, he's still considered kosher. Lamata min harukuva pasul, but if it extends beyond the knee, that would be too much, and that would render him unfit. The Mishnah. Ein lo beitzim, o ein lo elo beitzo achas. A Kohen who has no testicles, or he has only one. Zehu meruach eshech, ha'amur b'torah. The Torah, in the section dealing with Kohen blemishes, mentions meruach eshech, and the Tanakhama says that that is a reference to this testicle either lacking totally, or even one is lacking. Rabbi Yishmael Omer, kol shenimruchu ashochov. Nimruchu would be they were compressed or mashed. Rabbi Kiva Omer, kol sheruach ba'ashochav. There's air that accumulated in that area. Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus Omer, kol shemarov hashuchim. Anyone whose complexion is dark or black. Each one of these opinions is explaining the words Ruach Eshech in his own way. The Meforshim say that there isn't necessarily a machloikis in terms of actuality, in terms of the one saying that which the other says is not a mum. No, they might very well all be unanimous in agreeing that these are all mumen. However, the controversy surrounds how to explain the words ruach oshech in the Torah. As we go on in the Gemara, we notice triangles, and under our Mivneh heading, we indicate Kashiole, Kushos shel kol echor al pirusho shel hasheni by Mishnah, the difficulties that each one has with the other one's explanation. So, the Gemara. Kashiole Rabbi Shmuel, the Rabbi Shmuel, who was the second opinion in the Mishnah, he had difficulty with what the Tanakhama said. Hi, if the Tanakhama is correct, namely, the missing of testicles is a problem, and that is what's meant by this pasuk, then choser eshech miboya lei. It should have said choser, meaning absent or missing, an eshech and a beitza. Therefore, toni shenimruchu ashochav. The pasuk didn't say choser eshech, it said meruach eshech. So he came out, therefore Rabbi Shmuel came to his conclusion that it meant that the testicles were crushed. Kashyo le Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, in looking at Rabbi Shmuel's pshat, had difficulty. He says, "Hai mamruach eshech miboile." It should have said mamruach. Therefore, tani sheho ruach ba'ashochav. Therefore, he, Rabbi Akiva, said meruach oshech is a reference to air in the in that area. Kashyo le Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus, and Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus, who appeared after Bekiva, had difficulty with Rabbi Kiva's approach. He said, "Hi ruach eshech miboyle." The pasuk should have said ruach eshech. Therefore, Tony, he, Rabbi Chanina, came up with the pshat of shemar ov chashuchim, that his complexion is dark, exceptionally dark. Kosover. Now, how do you go from meruach eshech to this pshat of dark complexion? So the Gemara explains, Kosovar, he, Rabbi Chanina, is of the opinion, Gorin, Umosifin, Vidorshin, that one can, in order to expound on Psukim, that there is the possibility, of course it's based on a tradition that he must have had, that one can subtract the letter from one word and attach it to the other word and come to a conclusion. Now, how does that operate over here? So you take the ches from the word meruach and the aleph from the word eshech, and you put the ches where the aleph was and the aleph where the ches was, and you come out with
this you come out with marov, choshech. So you took the ches from the meruach word and took the aleph from the eshech word and switched their locations, and you come out with mar'eh choshech, an appearance of darkness, of black or complexion. Well, the Gemara asks, how can Rabbi Hanina ben Atignus say his pshat, hainu kushi? Is this not the same as kushi? Kushi is blackness, and that appears in the Mishnah Daf Mem Hei Omid Beis. So we have our Mishnah, according to Rabbi Hanina, saying the same thing as the Mishnah later on. The Gemara answers, Rabbi Hanina ben Antignus lo toni kushi. Rabbi Hanina ben Antignus himself was a Tana. He doesn't have in his Mishnayis that word. So he says that the idea of black complexion is taught only in this Mishnah. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.